WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker.
Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. Now, I don't want to be a Grinch, but around this time, when you've heard certain holiday songs for, I don't know, the 100th time, you get a little cranky. So a few years ago, we invited a musical hero of mine to come join us in the studio to shake things up. That hero would be a man named Kirk Douglas, who professionally goes by the name Captain Kirk. He's the lead guitarist of The Roots. Living life in these cold streets. Hey, who's worrying about you, babe, when you wildin' out, running around in these streets? These days, The Roots are really well known as the house band for Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show, but for hip-hop fans, The Roots have been one of the most innovative and hard-working acts in the genre for a very long time. Kirk Douglas is a key part of the band's signature hybrid of soul, jazz, funk, and rock. And I thought he would be the ideal person to put a new spin on some very traditional holiday tunes.
It's that time of year. We hear the familiar songs over and over. You're walking through a department store. Yeah. You're in the backseat of a cab. You're overhearing somebody else's headphones on the subway, whatever it is. Now, this isn't a matter of stump the stars, but I want to ask you, is there something you can play us a kind of standard in your own way so that we'll love it again? Should we give it a shot?
I've never really sat and tried to do this, so...
Thank you. go.
I never tried that before. Okay, that wasn't that as was bad as I thought it was going
to be. That was off the top of your head.
Yeah. I think it's going to go downhill from here.
I don't think so. Do you give yourself a new guitar for Christmas? Or are you guitared out?
Wow.
No guitars.
Is this a therapy
out.
Session yeah. or an interview? Yeah, like I'm this week, at this time I'm going through a bass thing because I'm starting to do home recording and I realize I don't have a bass. And then I feel entitled to get a bass, but I also realize there's different bass sounds you could go for.
And the next thing you know, you have four new cases in the
yeah,
house.
Yeah. So that's what I'm going. So there's going to be a Christmas bass. All right. Yeah.
I'm glad to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remarkable musician, and one of the things that's so remarkable about you is your versatility. And I wanted to get a sense of what you were listening to growing up on Long Island, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, when I had no control over the music around me and it was all my parents, it was classical music on Sundays and a lot of reggae, a lot of soul, old soul, a lot of crooners. You know, Johnny Mathis, just a lot of ska. You know, my parents loved to throw parties, so there'd always be a lot of, you know, Jamaican party music, which a lot of times was calypso. But, you know, my dad, he'd be playing music till late in the night, and he'd play, you know, old funk, you know, like Simonde.
It was like you had the hippest parents in world history. Musically, at least.
Yeah. I mean, but he had, you know, my dad liked a lot of stuff, you know, that I didn't, you know, at the time appreciate, you know, and I only started to appreciate later.
But your parents wanted you to be a classical musician. They wanted you to go in that direction.
They would have liked that. But the thing that attracted me to the guitar was the mystique of it with, you know, seeing Kiss, you know, and when I was at a young age. And
so you wanted the whole notion of a guitar superhero appealed to you as well as the music.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Kiss sort of embodied like the music, and they matched the visual with the music, and they had these, you know, magical, almost like talisman with their instruments that they were able to like conjure these sounds with, and they looked cool. It was like they looked, you know, a guitar sort of looks like a combination of a spaceship and a surfboard and a car all rolled into one. It comes in different colors. So it's no mistake that, you know, you have magazines that have cars and guitars in the same magazine or the same book, you know. They can be shapely too. You know, there's it's a very attractive instrument.
So what's the first time you picked up a guitar and made a sound out of it that resembled music that made you think this could be my life?
There was the attraction I spoke of and just walking past a music store and seeing them in the window and just wanting to just hold one, just to touch one. And the first time that I got to hold or touch one, I guess it was in fifth grade or...
Sounds like an erotic attachment.
Yeah, I'm holding on to it now.
You are indeed.
Yeah, maybe I should put it down. Maybe I'll be able to speak more coherently.
Who were your guitar gods at that time when you were... learning and coming up?
Eddie Van Halen, you know, Def Leppard was coming out at the time. Yeah, it's sometimes it's a little embarrassing because, like, you know, for Roots fans, you know, they'd probably want to hear something a little deeper than that.
You think people don't want to hear about white metal bands? It confuses people.
I think there can be some confusion, and I get, you know, sometimes I get flack for it at times from my some of my bandmates, but it's just, you know, I was a product of my surroundings.
Now, when you started with the Roots, they were still a very hard traveling band, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just a lot of bus, a lot of van, a lot of
250 dates a year.
So it's almost like B.B. King level touring.
Yeah, yeah. It's that when they refer to themselves as the hardest working band in show business, it was not an exaggeration.
So now you have this gig that probably is a lot better for the stability of life. You're in New York all the time on the Fallon show,
mm-hmm.
on the Tonight Show. How did that change things? And did it change the band in any significant way?
Well, I think the band was moving in a direction that would give us the aptitude to hang in that situation, because I think even before we'd started doing the Tonight Show, I think we already did a night of 100 stars. I'm pretty sure that we did that first.
Now, you had an experience with Prince. I think that he borrowed your guitar.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
Oh, that's this guitar.
We're sitting in a studio with a white Epiphone.
Yeah, it's a 1961 Epiphone Crestwood guitar. So he came in to play. This is what before the Tonight Show was the Tonight Show. This is when it was still Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. He came in with his band, and apparently he arrived before his guitar did. So he looked at my gaggle of guitars, and he saw this one, which, you know, he could have been attracted to the purple strap on it. But it's a beautiful-sounding playing guitar. And right before the show started, our music booker at the time, Jonathan Cohen, came up to me. He's like, Prince wants to use your guitar for the performance, and he wants to buy it from you. He wants to buy the guitar from you, and he wants to use it for the performance. I said, well, Prince can use it for the performance, but he can't buy it from me. I'm not selling it. I love the guitar. So Prince is doing two songs that night. He plays the first song, I guess one of his new songs. He plays it with his own guitar. And after he finishes the first song, he comes over to me. He's like, yo, let me see that other guitar. And so like a Prince fan, I say, yeah, sure. And I offer it to him. I give it to him. And he goes and he plays an incendiary version of Bambi from, I think, one of his earlier albums. Did an incredible version of it. And then at the end of the song, he picks the guitar up, and I thought he was going to play behind his head, actually. And then he tosses it into the air and towards no one.
No guitar tech is waiting to catch it.
No.
Jesus.
Yeah. And I mean, I was so excited watching him play that. You know, I was like, I couldn't believe it. And then when he threw it, I just the feeling, like, it just felt like instantaneous emotional abuse. That's just what it felt like.
Wow, where did it land?
It landed on the ground. Like, it fell like on a monitor, and it just strutted off the stage. And
did you have words after?
Yeah, yeah. I went, you know, they came up to me. I was like, Prince wants to talk to you. I was like, oh, really? I'd like to talk to Prince, you know? And so I had, you know, I had the guitar in like a couple pieces, you know, going towards the.
Did it break?
It broke, yeah, totally.
What happened? The neck broke off from the body?
This part.
Oh, my God. There's a big crack on the back of the headpiece.
Yeah, yeah. But he apologized. He's like, I'm sorry. And he did say, you know, I'll take care of it. And
but the dough wasn't the thing.
No, it wasn't. So like a Prince fan, I'm like, okay, you broke the guitar. Do you think you could at least sign it? And
did he sign the?
No,
I don't see a signature. What's
he's
the
like,
deal?
Oh, I haven't signed anything since the 70s.
Wow.
In his own eccentric way, he totally did sign it. He didn't use it, signed it with
he
a
sure
pen.
He sure did. I can see the giant crack behind
it. Yeah, yeah.
So, in addition to having two kids that you're very attentive to and rehearsing and touring, you've also got a new solo record that you're working on.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm doing that. That's sort of my guilty pleasure record. And that's just to exercise the part of me that likes to come up with music. It's your musical journal, if you will.
Is there a song from the new solo album you can tell us about and maybe we'll play?
Yeah, it's
That'd
a song.
Be great.
It's just a song called Our Year. I think I wrote it on a New Year's Day. Sort of, it's like my own personal auld lang syne.
1, 2, 3. Here's to the first day. Feels a little strange. Feels a little strange. I stand in my own way. Really want to change. I wish that I could change the moment we all have been waiting for, to finding the keys that unlock the door. Moving all down so we can be sure. Let's let this year be our year.
That was The Roots' Kirk Douglas back in 2018, and he just released a new solo album last month working under the name 100 Watt Heart. It's called New Unknown. This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. More to come.
WNYC Studios is supported by Wondery. 50 high school senior girls descend on Mobile, Alabama every summer to compete for a massive cash prize. It isn't Survivor. It's one of America's most lucrative scholarship competitions for teen girls. It's been around for 7 decades. Now you'll hear what took place behind the scenes. From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery comes The Competition. Host Shima Oliai was Nevada's contestant 20 years ago. Now she's returning as a judge to find out what 2 weeks with 50 of the country's most ambitious teens can tell us about girlhood in America. What happens when the competitors are thrown into the deep end with the best and brightest? And how does surviving the competition prepare them for everything that comes after? Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, I'm Roz Chast from The New Yorker. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by NetSuite. Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on delivering your product or service, the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified platform. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/New Yorker. netsuite.com/New Yorker.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. Over the decades, there have been some very high-profile investigative panels that have looked into national and political crises. The Kefauver Committee famously looked into organized crime. The Warren Commission in the early 60s investigated the Kennedy assassination. And the Senate held its Watergate hearings, which led to the resignation of Richard Nixon. And yet, arguably, none of those committees has had to tackle a political emergency as profound as the January 6th attack on the Capitol. The basic contours of what happened at the Capitol have never really been in doubt, yet the Select Committee had fundamental questions it needed to answer. Was Trump's inaction during the rioting a failure of leadership or a real strategy, a way of fomenting chaos to retain power? Were groups like the Oath Keepers just a bunch of angry white nationalists, or were they in fact the armed vanguard of a coup? The committee has just released its official report, and The New Yorker is publishing it in book form, partnering with Celadon Books. The report is comprehensive, let's say, long, in other words, and taking in every ugly detail of Trump's attempt to delegitimize this election is honestly a challenge to the spirit. But as one member of the committee, Jamie Raskin of Maryland, told me, the committee's work here was to establish a definitive historical record, and the rest is up to the Justice Department and the courts. One thing is clear from this report: we cannot afford to look away. Democracy remains under attack. And as I wrote it in the introduction to the volume, a citizenry that can no longer bring itself to pay attention to such an investigation or to absorb its astonishing findings risks moving even farther toward a post-truth, post-democratic America. We have more about the January 6th report at newyorker.com/report.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. We're going to close the show today with a look back into musical history. You may know the work of Roz Chast as a cartoonist from her work in The New Yorker or perhaps from her book, Can't We Please Talk About Something More Pleasant, which was a bestseller. But here's something you probably don't know about Roz. She and Patty Marks, a staff writer of great distinction, play in a band, not just any band, a band with an extraordinary influence on pop history. And if you haven't heard of them, it's because they were always too far ahead of their time to break through to the mainstream. Here for your listening pleasure are Patty Marks and Roz Chast.
I'm Patty Marks.
I'm Roz Chast.
And we are the Ooklier Meltdown. You may not remember us, but you probably do. We were very, very big in the 60s when we were the Daily Pukulelis. Now we're the Ooklier Meltdown, and we are coming back. We're practicing.
For our return tour as Ooklier or Ooklier Meltdown, because we don't know how to, we're still debating on how to pronounce it. Mm-hmm.
We've gotten some experts.
Yeah.
But even they don't know. So, eons ago, I was playing with Bobby Zimmerman. Bobby Zimmerman.
And I was with Joni.
You were with Joni. We were both too good for the rest of our band. It was very clear. I mean, it's the reason we got kicked out of the bands, really. Yeah.
Well, they were good also, but I felt like the way that they were good was a different way than we were good.
Well, we had personality. Yeah. They had talent.
Yes.
Which, okay, each to its own, right?
Yeah.
We were really, just didn't belong with them. We had kind of a
And nobody wanted us in their band. I would go up to bands like Iron Butterfly.
Yeah.
You know, Jimi Hendrix Experience. I went there.
I gave Joan Baez two ideas, which really made her. She was wearing, had a pixie haircut. I said, go long, Joni. And then when she began, she would just say 1, 2, 3, 4. And I said, Joni, what you should do is flip your hair upside down, the way your long hair, after you grow it, and just say, this song's for David. He's in jail doing what he thinks is right. And if you notice, that's how she opened all the time.
So we got together and we realized that we were very simpatico and we liked the same songs. They were all public domain.
We liked the same color ukulele.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So we formed the Daily Pukuleles.
Yes, and we got very big for a while.
Yeah,
and
we got very big, and then
But then Paul stole all our money.
Paul, our manager, stole all our money. We didn't have any, luckily, but...
He stole what
we
had.
He stole our money. He stole all the money we were going to get.
Yeah. And that was when things did get bad, though, because then we had to go into rehab.
Mm-hmm. Which we liked.
We learned a lot. We made ashtrays.
We have some of the ashtrays from rehab.
Yeah. Yeah. We met some interesting people. What was our first breakout hit? Boy, it was a long time ago.
Was it Star Spangled Banner? Was it...
I thought it was Happy Birthday.
Happy Birthday, yeah.
Yeah.
We wrote Happy Birthday.
Happy Birthday to you.
Yeah. That was... It's so...
And now that we've
universal,
made,
really.
It
because
is universal.
If you're alive, if you're listening...
Right. Well, except for the people who have unhappy birthdays.
That's true. I mean, I don't want to force... Maybe we should change it to like...
Happy Birthday.
Birthday to you.
Yeah, whatever birthday to
whatever you. Whatever birthday. Because, you know, you don't want to pressure anybody.
Mm, right.
It's like, you know...
Disappointed birthday we could do.
Yeah. Neutral.
Neutral birthday.
Neutral birthday.
Yeah. Have a birthday to you.
Yeah.
We're also working on Wrinkle, Wrinkle, Little Face.
Yes, yes. Wrinkle, Wrinkle, Little Face.
Also, we're working another.
Wrinkles form in every place.
Right. will you?
Wrinkles high,
lines
wrinkles
erase. You want to play something?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Should we play Camptown Races, also called Camptown Ladies?
Yeah, yeah.
Which we should say that we rewrote, and if you listen carefully to the lyrics, if you can hear them, you will see why. And I usually introduce it because I don't have a singing voice, but I have a talking voice.
You have a very,
a very good talking
voice.
I was in a talking choir.
My talking voice can get kind of like panicky and screechy.
Well,
okay.
So this is On Your Mark. Get set. Go.
Camptown ladies, we don't know. Doo-dah, doo-dah. Who they are or where they go. All the doo-dah day. Gonna change the words. With the chords we'll stick. Don't want to pay no copyright. And the ladies make us sick. Wikipedia, not much help. Doo-dah, doo-dah. And don't think we didn't try Yelp. All the doo-dah day.
The end.
The end.
It was on our first album, Ocular Accidents, which was our breakout album, really.
Yeah. We had a lot of records.
Right.
Duck and Cover.
Right.
Famous Duck and Cover.
Learn Ukulele in Your Sleep.
You too can play ukulele.
But not as well as we can.
Yeah. That was the subtitle.
Mm-hmm.
How to Make Love to a Man with a Ukulele.
Right. That wasn't Beethoven, that was us.
Crazy because then we were touring all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being on the road, it's really rough.
Right.
It's
also
rough,
confusing. You're always like, do you turn left? Do you turn right? That is the hard thing about the road.
I know. And you know how I feel about driving. I mean, I didn't learn until after we were on the road. So a lot of times when we were on the road,
we were lost a lot on the road.
We were lost. And I
was a problem.
And I would be like screaming while we were like merging into traffic because. When I merge into traffic, I have to really scream. And I was taking a lot of drugs back then because being on the road was so
made
scary.
Made you nervous, right?
It made me very, very nervous. Sometimes I didn't even know if I was on the road. Am I dreaming or are we actually driving on the road? Are we really on the road?
Or maybe we're just blowing in the wind.
Yeah.
Episode. Oh,
yes.
that was
going electric.
Well,
we had
did.
Fights. We had
we
fights.
We did. Our manager, Paul, who took our money,
said
we had to go electric. So we went to your house and we set up in the driveway, and we didn't really know how to. We're, you know, if you've seen
a ukulele, there's no place to really plug it in.
There's no place to plug it in.
Yeah, exactly.
So we thought...
We went to the hardware store.
We went to the hardware store.
We bought extension
cords. Batteries, extension cords.
Everything electric.
No place to plug it in. So you know what we did? We were pretty good students in elementary school. You can make a battery with a baked potato or a raw potato.
A raw potato.
But that was our first mistake, baked, but okay. Yeah. At least we didn't go mashed. We got a raw potato, we set up the wires, and we tried to go electric.
We tried to plug the potato into the ukulele.
Then our manager told us, all right, if you can't go electric, you should break some ukuleles on stage. So we're a little afraid of that because of our shoes.
Yes.
We didn't really want to damage our shoes.
I also didn't want to get like a cut because I had read about sepsis.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Ukulele disco? You don't remember that?
Yeah.
It was like we were at Studio 54 every night. That was like we were very heavily into that whole scene for a little while because ukuleles were like... There was this brief moment somewhere around like November 18th to November 20th, 1974, where ukuleles were kind of
Well, then we tried... It was Sunday Night Rash.
Sunday Night Rash. Yeah, we tried. We tried. It didn't really, you know, I don't know why. Maybe like it passed its peak at that point. Yeah. People were too busy with, I don't know, Casey and the Sunshine Band.
We couldn't get into some of the discos because of the bouncer.
That's true.
The bouncer didn't let us
in. We were too short.
Yeah, we were too short.
Yeah. And the glasses. I think that was troublesome. We should not have worn the glasses.
Right. And they were always inspecting our... And ukuleles.
For drugs. Because we did used to keep our drugs in the ukulele, along with the gum and the tissues and, you know,
and the
change of underwear.
Pencil.
Pencils, sketch pads. You could put a little sketch pad in there. You can carry this as a purse.
Yeah. We never broke up. That's probably why we weren't a bigger hit.
Yeah, and I do really hope that we peak yet again as whichever we decide it's going to be.
Right. Well, we're doing the best we can that doesn't involve work.
We have.
Do you want to play
a weemawack? Yeah.
You say weemawack. I say weemaway.
It is weemaway.
I didn't know.
That's wrong.
We didn't know for the longest time what weemaway was.
And we
still don't. But I had the theory that it's what you do all the doo-dah day.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight.
Chorus. On your mark. Get set, go. A whim away,
a whim away, a whim away, a whim away.
Verse 2.
Near the village, the quiet village, the lion sleeps tonight.
Back to the chorus.
A weem away, 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 a weem away.
The end. We're working on some new lyrics for this that was... Near New Jersey, the great New Jersey, Chris Christie sleeps tonight.
Yeah, because we like being topical.
Yeah, we like being topical. We have a great rhyme with Obama and pajamas, but we need a story to go with it.
That was Patty Marks and Roz Chast on vocals, and yes, ukulele. Our story aired in 2017. The disco ukulele remix came to us courtesy of Terrence Bernardo. I'm David Remnick. Have a wonderful holiday weekend and the best for the new year. This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. See you next time.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Merrill Garbus of Tune Yards, with additional music by Alexis Quadrado. This episode was produced by Brita Green, Kalalia, David Krasnow, Louis Mitchell, and Ngofen Mputubwele,
along with Adam Howard, Jeffrey Masters, Will Coley, and Michael May. And we had assistance from Mike Kutchman, Meher Bhatia, and James Napoli.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.